in Sanook. It is it's very commodious quarters. Deng Xiaoping called it a palace, and it wasn't too far off the mark. Every time I met the prince, he had almost a different viewpoint at this point. His views and the American views with regard to the invasion of Cambodia were really quite harmonious, and it was just a warm and friendly visit with no contention between us. That was not as true later on. And on that one day of the 22nd, for example, met with a Washington press group, 20 people, Lehigh University group, 45 people, plastic surgeons group, 35 people, people-to-people medical group, also 35 people, so that the general traffic was really moving along. And then on the 24th of March came the first of several congressional groups, Codell Ellman. And this was a group from, this was not a White House group, this was a House Ways and Means Committee. They, of course, wanted to meet with Deng Xiaoping, which they did, and there's nothing particularly sticks out in my mind of that meeting. The discussions were mostly concerned with economics, trade relations, and since that mostly all lay in the future, it was really just expressions of optimism on all sides. And they came on a Saturday, and left on the following Tuesday. So it was a very brief visit. Then I have down here stag banquet for CCPIT for 36 people. Oh, by the CCPIT for a U.S. group at the Peking Hotel.
Is that a National Council on U.S.-China Trade delegation, perhaps?
Could have been, probably was. Does Stanford have an engineering school?
Yes.
Stanford School of Engineering, 17 people. And we had a signing ceremony at the Foreign Trade Center. Would that have been the claims assets?
No. Claims assets only was signed after Juanita Krepp's visit, if you recall.
Oh, that's right. That's right. There was a snag developed. Don't know what that was.
Maybe for an exhibition, if it was CCPIT. At some point there was
a... Probably was.
Exhibition.
And the Eastman Kodak people came. And then on the 2nd of April, the Chase Pacific and that consortium that had, quote, the contract to build a Foreign Trade Center cum hotel.
Ken Morris at this point.
Ken Morris had a press conference to announce to the world this hotel. whole thing. Well, of course, it was never, well, it was a contract, I guess, to a degree, because they were subsequently reimbursed for their authorized expenses, 100 cents on the dollar, and their out-of-pocket expenses, not specifically authorized, but in line with the work at 50 cents on the dollar. And by this time, the AP and UPI was on board. Kaiser Engineering was in that consortium. And Chase Manhattan, of course.
INP? Was it? No, the other architect.
No. And Turner, I think, was the other group. And Esso Chemical, Gulf Oil, National Committee U.S.-China Trade had another heavy machinery group come in and met late at night on the 4th of April with Kang Xiran.
Kang Xiran was still surging forward as a political figure at that point.
Yes, he was. It was before any of his difficulties developed.
Capable man.
And then I see we had a briefing for Chinese American lawyers. There were about a dozen of them, as I remember it. They were very much interested, of course, and excited about being in China. And to the Chinese, were somewhat exotic because they were all lawyers. Then we had a luncheon for a China Petroleum delegation. That would probably be a group going to the U.S., going to Houston and other places. And then the American Basketball Association brought over a college basketball team.
The American Basketball Association, ABA.
What's the college groupings?
NCAA. I think there was an NCAA team after the season was over and after the NCAA finals. They sent an all-star team, college players. I think that's
right. Okay, that's what it would have been. And then the U.S. textile negotiating team showed up. That was on the 9th of April.
This is preliminary to Juanita Krepp's visit.
Right.
Because that falls in her domain.
Well, did she? She didn't tackle textiles, though, did she?
Oh, yes.
Did she?
She touched on it.
I thought she was trying to stay away from it.
Bob Strauss came in much more heavily
in May,
but Juanita certainly did touch on it because politically it was going to be quite relevant to an ability to pass the trade agreement, we thought. There had to be progress on textiles, as I recall, in order to get a trade agreement through the Hill. And I remember her discussing this issue, and then she discussed it on Lee Jong's visit to the United States much later in the year, went into it with much more detail. And wasn't Barraclough, the state guy, involved in
yes.
the negotiations? Yes, I'm sure that she was involved in it.
Then on the night of Monday, the 9th of April, eight of us from the embassy with wives, included in the eighth, went to have dinner with Prince Sihanouk and Princess Monique. excellent food, which he had supervised the cooking of.
Chinese food or Western?
No,
French.
It was Western. It was French. Except we had chicken a la Maryland. It was one of the courses, because he told us that back in January, when he had traveled from New York to Washington to see Deng Xiaoping by car, they had stopped at a certain restaurant in Maryland and had chicken a la Maryland, and he had gotten the recipe, and he served it to us. And afterwards, we saw a movie. It was a movie he had made when he was still in Cambodia. And we sat in this, what's really a gymnasium, where people used to play basketball, but also had projection equipment and a huge screen. And the prince got very sentimental and would cry, and Princess Monique had tears running down her face. There were three of these movies, as I understood it. And he said we would have other dinners and see the rest of them, but this was the only movie that I saw. Yes, Barraclough headed up the textile negotiating team for us.
And he was included in Juanita's delegation later.
Right. And the college basketball group played a basketball game in the Capitol Stadium. Then we had a reception for the Pan Am group, 65 of them. That would have been a tour group, I guess. Probably one of the first Pan Am, probably the first Pan Am tour group that came through. And Steve Bechtel of Bechtel Corporation and Chrome George of Alcoa. And I remember that discussion was to tell us about the high hopes that Alcoa had of huge aluminum project for
Yunnan project,
for a smelter and the building a power plant because there was no power to sustain it, and all of which, of course, never came to pass.
That was this huge project on the upper reaches of the Red River in Yunnan province, where they have large bauxite deposits, isn't that?
I think so, yes.
In a very remote area. Did you think at the time that some of these plans were realistic, or did you feel it was all pipe dream?
Well, I had been extremely skeptical about from the time of the issuance of the 10-year plan and all the projects and goals. I'd been extremely skeptical. When a group would come in to talk about a specific project, I obviously didn't say, I think you're wasting your time. If they asked specific questions, I would answer those as frankly as I thought they should be answered, but I was extremely skeptical.
On this one, I was not. I had tried to develop a somewhat differentiated sense, but I thought that this one, the Chinese had really thought through, that there was a strategic interest maybe even in getting us involved in the development of their southwest and of the upper reaches of the Red River, which after all goes into Vietnam. And it made a great deal of sense.
Well, I was speaking in general terms.
In general.
Certainly, there could have been specific projects. A great concentration of effort was made.
Yes.
I'm talking about the whole business across the board.
this was a time when the Chinese were scurrying about seeking loans, seeking credit from foreign banks. Looked as if they were going to be willing to draw on those credit rates. They had already begun to cut back from the 78 plans. We are now talking about a period in 79 where we had already sensed that they had abandoned their wildest hopes. And I still don't fully understand why some of these projects ended up not being pursued. I can't say I fully comprehend. I think it's related to dimensions of high-level politics in China that we don't understand, but I think that the metallurgy, the floor and Jiangxi, there were three that I thought were realistic. The floor projects in Jiangxi for, non-ferrous metals, but I don't remember which, and Yunnan for the aluminum, and then I thought the Bethlehem steel negotiations, which I think at this point were still going forward over improvement of Anshan iron and steel.
Pelletizing,
that I thought all three of those were going to go forward, and that the Chinese had been quite selective and narrowed their what they were interested in. I would attribute the ultimate abandonment of these to the turning away from metallurgy as a sector, industrial sector, deserving primacy, and their move toward light industry instead. And I somehow think that this was all related to the eventual political reversals of Kang Shuen and, to a lesser extent, of Yu Cho Li. They were really representative of heavy industry and of the metal industries, and that it was really Chun Yun's influence that came on later in 79. Much heavier, he had already returned, but he had not begun to fully assert himself and his interests in light industry and in communications, transportation, to the extent there were sectors that were going to be developed.
Right, that's probably true. Then our second Codel came, Codel Price. Was that the Armed Services Committee?
Yes.
Mel Price, of course, chairman of the Armed Services Committee.
Yes.
And there were 21 of them.
Important delegation.
Congressman Price, of course, had a very good control over the committee in a very non-assertive way, but they all seemed to respect him. I forget the name of the ranking Republican. He was very good in working with the chairman to have a very 21 congressmen plus several wives and plus the staff. It was a very, very big group, and its behavior was exemplary. They had the inevitable meeting with Hao Deqing and the welcoming banquet. Following that welcoming banquet, Sharon and I then went to a dinner dance that was given by Prince Sihanouk at his place in honor of the Cambodian New Year. Others from the embassy had been invited. Because we had gone to the Price banquet, we were quite late in getting there, so dinner was all out of the way. Dave Roy and his wife were sitting placed at the table with the North Koreans. That conversation was somewhat stilted. and the prince was had assembled a dance orchestra.
But the North Koreans were not under instructions not to talk to Steig. Were they able actually to say anything to him?
Well, very, very little, I guess. Very little. And the prince had gathered together a dance orchestra from members of the Beijing Philharmonic. He led the orchestra, and he occasionally played the saxophone, sang a great deal. There was a list of songs and pieces. Everybody had a copy. There were 57, as I remember it. But every time there was applause, particularly if it was one of his compositions, there were a lot of his compositions on the list, he'd play it again. So that it went on until the wee hours of the morning. I must confess that although we came late, we also left relatively early.
Could Stape staying behind under instructions from you stay to the end?
I don't think he stayed quite to the end, but he stayed quite a while. Well, Charlie Sylvester and Evie were there, and there were others. And Codell Price had their meeting with Deng Xiaoping. That was the time when they asked him, could he have taken Hanoi, etc. And then on that same day, Monday the 16th of April, they met at 4 o'clock with Deputy Chief of Staff Wu.
Wu Xiuquan.
He was the one who gave the briefing and was very free in admitting that they had a bad first 10 days, etc. And we had our farewell banquet at the Sichuan restaurant, which was very good.
General Wu is an impressive man.
Yes. Very impressive.
Long dealings with Americans in the Marshall Mission era.
I see.
And really the head of their equivalent of their DIA or CIA, somewhat in between those two.
Well, that was that session that Codell had with him was a very, very useful one, and very good. And they left then the next morning. I see that I went down to the Beijing Hotel to meet with the trade union representatives of the advisory committee to the textile negotiators. I explained to the industry people I thought it was wise, in view of my background, that I should meet separately with them since they'd asked for it. They readily agreed, and then I had a meeting with the trade union and the industry people. And then that same afternoon, Codell Brooks came. There were 40 of them. Now, that was the last of the White House delegations. This was the one, I think, that Jim Wright was supposed to have headed. And then when he bowed out at the last minute, Jack Brooks took over. And he ran it with a very, very loose rein. Made disparaging remarks about his colleagues to me, and well within their hearing, almost from when we first met them out of the airport.
He had been in Tientsin after the war. He went on the trip just so he could get down to Tientsin, as he explained to me. I don't know whether he was able to duck out separately.
Maybe he did. Maybe he did. I'm sure if he'd wanted that, it was so close that they certainly would have accommodated him. But my experience was that when you had a mixed congressional delegation, they were very erratic in their behavior. But if you had a subcommittee or a group from a committee used to being with each other, used to working with each other, that their behavior was always very good. And and...
Codell Brooks was one that led to a certain amount of personal problems for me. I went up to brief them. Jim Wright was there at the time, and I started my briefing by saying that given the size of his delegation, Codell Price, a couple others that were on their way, there were going to be more people in China on Codell's. You know, I told you this story, there were going to be more people in China on Codell's than there usually were on the House floor. And he got furious, just absolutely furious.
Jim Wright got furious.
Just absolutely livid. And I said, well, look, because everyone broke into laughter when they heard this. And I said, he misunderstood. This was not a commentary on how few there were on the House floor, but how many there were going to be in China. But he would have none of that. So he called up Frank Moore in the White House and asked, you know, about me and these smart alecks that they send up the brief to Congress. And I wrote an abject letter of apology in which I invoked the name of John F. Kennedy, saying the first time I'd ever heard of Congressman Wright was the day John F. Kennedy was shot, because he was there and all, and I remember said President Kennedy praising him, and I had looked forward to meeting him, and I'm sorry that this briefing got off.
Well,
and then he didn't go.
So they came in the afternoon, we had a briefing for them, then we had a reception for the U.S. textile negotiators with their Chinese counterparts. And that, as I remember, it went, Madame Han, of course, was the chief personage on the Chinese side, but it went reasonably well, and then Codell Brooks had their welcoming banquet that night. And while they were still here, Codell Church came the next morning.
Now, did Dick Holbrook come with them? I don't remember.
I don't think so. No, I don't think so. This must have been a smaller delegation.
Yes.
Because we had a briefing for them down in the conference room. Well, we had a buffet lunch for the group, and I see the number 41. So it wasn't that small, I guess. And they met with Hao Deqing, which was not a very satisfactory meeting.
Why?
Well, he was not very communicative, and they were asking some probing questions, and he was either giving an obviously party line speech or being unresponsive. Then they too met with Deng Xiaoping.
This was Biden. Senator Biden was on this one, wasn't he?
Yeah.
This is
was that both a House and a Senate?
This is the one that raised the listening business.
Right.
And we ran into them in Tokyo.
When they met with Deng Xiaoping.
I remember this.
Was that a House and... No, I know what had happened. I know what had happened. What's the name of the Republican woman from Maryland who's on the House Armed Services Committee?
No, Millicent Fenwick.
No, she's
no,
from New Jersey.
New Jersey. And not Barbara Mikulski.
No, she's a Republican.
I don't know.
They'd met earlier with Deng Xiaoping. She had asked me privately about the wisdom of raising this question. And I had responded, well, I didn't want to say, no, you can't raise it with the Chinese, but that I thought it would be better if it were raised privately rather than in a formal meeting. And so Representative Holt, Marjorie Holt, so she didn't raise it. But then Joe Biden raised it in the Codell Church meeting with Deng Xiaoping.
Pretty sure he did.
He did. I remember it distinctly. He wanted to know, he had two parts to his question. What were the chances of having a listening post? He prefaced it by saying about Iran, listening post for intelligence on Chinese soil, and would the Chinese be willing to buy F-16s or other sophisticated weaponry? And Dung's response was, with regard to the weaponry, if you dare to sell them, we dare to buy. Are you selling? And Joe said, I am not the president. And his answer to the listening post was to tell the story of the Soviets proposing a joint navy when the Chinese didn't have a navy, which was simply a device to get control of their ports. And in effect was saying, well, we might, but don't forget, sovereignty has to be properly recognized. And so then that same day, Crowder Brooks Brooks left, and church had their farewell banquet that same night. And then the next morning there was a special meeting between church and Javits and the textile delegation. Then while all this is going on, Nancy Kissinger and her Vogue group came. Had a luncheon for them. There were only 10. Her group was only 6 in number, I think. And that same afternoon, Codell Church left. And that same night, Madame Ho, Fong Hua's wife, gave a very small dinner for Nancy Kissinger at the Chin Mun restaurant. Just 2 tables. In the Vogue group was a hairdresser who had fixed Madame Ho's hair. And it was very becoming. She had on a brocade jacket.
She's a very striking person.
She is, but she was even more striking. And she obviously very much enjoyed it. Extremely pleased with everything all through the dinner. Next time I saw her, she was back in her usual style. And so the very next day, Codell Hawkins arrives. Gus Hawkins, of course,
an old friend of yours.
Our old friends, and we had a buffet luncheon for them. There were 30 of them. And then they met with Hao Deqing. And I remember after we left, one of the Chinese from the CPIFA took me on the side and said, we are getting so many problems with all these American requests to see Deng Xiaoping. Isn't it possible for them to talk to someone else, Li Xianyan or someone? So I got Gus and there were 2 or 3 others standing with him, and I explained that this is very difficult, and that if they would meet with Li Xianyan, it would be just as useful. Maybe they could learn even more, because in my experience, he is quite open. Plus, I said, we now have a new relationship, and every time important American groups come here, we shouldn't always just meet with Deng Xiaoping. We need to meet with other leaders of this government. They said, oh, of course. Oh, I tried this with Jack Brooks that previously. And they had grudgingly agreed. I thought they had agreed. They went back to the hotel and raised so much hell with the Chinese that even though they got him an audience with Deng Xiaoping, but they met with Li Xianyan, and it was a very very good meeting. And they left on the 23rd of April, on the 24th of April.
Should we call it quits at this point?
Right.
Pick it up tomorrow.